Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on Fox 28 event, which takes place in Orlando, Florida. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we won 2.55 units for UFC Fight Night 126 after going 1-0 on our premium bets. We also won our one-unit free bet on Curtis Millender. Back to the present, UFC on Fox 28 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Big Network Fox this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a bantamweight contest between Albert Morales, who is 7-3-1, and Manny Bermudez, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, where were the odds open for this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Bermudez open minus 245, the comeback on Morales plus 175, and that was offshore. The line actually in Las Vegas opened with, checking now, Bermudez minus 175, it looks like, and the comeback on Morales at plus 155. So what happened was the early action did come in on Morales early on offshore, and it drove the line down a little bit, and then Vegas and the market in general pretty much went up with the lines as well. So that's why you're seeing right now at BetDSI.com, our sponsored sportsbook, currently minus 180 for Bermudez, and the comeback on Morales at plus 150. So again, line margins have tightened up. There is two-way action on this fight, but a little bit more coming in on the dog early on. And I actually agree with the early dog action. I think the line was open a tad bit high. And with Bermudez, I know Bermudez is definitely the more hyped fighter coming in right now. I mean, he's the guy that everybody's kind of talking about as being such a great prospect, age 23. I mean, he's only going to improve fight by fight. He's got some decent experience on the regional scene for the most part. Nothing, I mean, if you look at his resume, he hasn't like beat anybody of note as of late. I mean, Kazmir, one of his recent wins back in the day, he was something okay. But I mean, at this point, he's way past his career as well. Salomeda, that was actually a pretty solid win for him, although it was a wrong decision. I mean, so that was a bad decision as well. So you got to dig deeper is what I'm trying to say with Bermudez, because basically what you're getting with him is a phenomenal ground fighter. I mean, the guy has some very slick submissions, really slick triangle chokes, really slick guillotine chokes. That's the kind of fear you have to have with this guy, is when he gets around your neck, or, you know, he gets you in all sorts of awkward positions on the ground, he's capable of submitting you. He doesn't need much to do so. So where most people would probably not be in much danger, Bermudez has that kind of unorthodox but slick and technical submission game that you could be in some serious trouble if you leave a limb out there, or again, your neck exposed, he'll take advantage. So very slick, very dangerous on the ground. His stand-up game isn't bad. It's developing still. It's getting a little bit better. He does try to counter and throw in combinations at times as well. It's okay, but nothing special. I think Morales is going to have a big edge actually standing up on the feet, and his wrestling background, although he has been put on his back in the UFC thus far, especially against Brett Johns, I think Morales' wrestling is actually a little bit better than we're all probably giving credit for. And Bermudez's wrestling offense isn't really that good. So in my opinion, what we're going to see here is Morales kind of stifle the takedown attempts of Bermudez, keep this fight upright, and then probably do some damage on the feet and outstrike Bermudez to the point where he pulls away and either wins a decision or maybe even gets a late stoppage over Bermudez. So this is a big step up in competition for Bermudez, in my opinion, fighting Morales, where as Morales, he's facing a very dangerous opponent, but it's kind of a step down, in my opinion, because he's faced some pretty solid fighters recently in the UFC. It's almost like they're using Morales already as a gatekeeper type of situation, you know, for the bantamweight division, which he hasn't had a ton of experience doing so, but Morales is definitely not an easy out. And he needs to pick up a win here. I mean, he's lost to two very good fighters in Lopez and Johns, his last couple outings, and they're giving him another opponent that he's going to face here in Bermudez, which is another prospect. So Morales has to get the job done if he wants to keep, you know, his contract and everything, in check for the UFC. It's an important fight for him. He realizes that he can't let this go to the judges either. I just recently saw an interview that we have on him as well, that he was saying, he's sick of the judges or whatnot. So I think that, you know, he knows what this is about. He has to really put it on Bermudez, keep off his back, and fight smart in this fight to get the W, and it's an important win for him. So I like it. I like the spot he's in. I think all the hype and all the, you know, everything that everybody's saying about Bermudez is a little bit blown out of proportion, and I think that he might get exposed in this matchup against Morales if Morales can keep off his back and fight smart. So I'm going to have enough confidence in Morales' game and what he's accomplished thus far to say stylistically this is a bad matchup for Bermudez, and I think Morales is going to get it done here. So my pick is going to be Morales, and it is definitely a dog or pass situation.
Stylistically, it isn't exactly a bad matchup for Bermudez, because so far in his career, when Albert Morales faced a fighter that wanted to put him on his back, they've been able to do it. Now, granted, Manny Bermudez is not as talented on the ground in terms of wrestling ability and his ability to keep an opponent down as Brett Johns is. But I still think Manny Bermudez is a very talented grappler. And, I mean, this is a guy with a lot of slick chokes. I mean, he can do a lot of things. And I think that he can really frustrate Morales if and when this fight goes to the floor, because once it does that, I mean, that's Bermudez's world. Bermudez is not that great of a striker. So I would say if in stand-up exchanges, Morales should have the edge. Although Morales, you know, he still has that same problem of trying to swing for the fences whenever he is in the stand-up portion of the fight. And he loads up on too many shots. He leaves himself wide open to counters, and he's been punished by superior strikers in that department, but against Bermudez, he should be able to get away with it. So, I mean, this fight's going to boil down to whether or not Bermudez can take Morales down and keep him down, because if he does, and he does it for at least two rounds, then he's going to win at least a decision. While Bermudez is good on the ground, I don't know if he'll be able to actually submit Morales. I'm not going to rely on that, but I do think that he's talented enough to take Morales down and win at least two rounds. So I'm going to go with that. Although, you never quite know with a UFC debuter. I mean, a fighter can look great on film and then they step into the octagon and they get themselves too hyped up and they gas out quickly, and all kinds of crazy things can happen in a debut when they still kind of have those octagon jitters. So if Bermudez does not have that problem, then I think that he can win this fight. If he doesn't, Morales can win. But I'm relying on Bermudez having the experience and ability to overcome any jitters and get the win here, because I do think that his ground game will overcome Morales's power and striking edges. So my pick is going to be Bermudez. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Eric Shelton, who is 11-4, taking on Alex Perez, who is 19-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Line opened -160 offshore for Perez, the comeback on Shelton at +120. And right now, it looks like over at betdsi.com, it is -140 for Perez, +110 for Shelton. And then in Vegas, it opened up -145, +125. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There is a little bit more action coming in the dog's way. And I had another spot where I do agree with the early dog action coming in. And now, again, it hasn't been crazy movement because Perez is still a slight favorite, but this is a good fight. I mean, you have two of the better guys fighting in the flyweight division. I mean, Perez coming off of a very impressive UFC debut. The guy was also actually on Dana White's Contender Series recently as well, and got a impressive finish on that. So he's got kind of back-to-back wins in the UFC, if you want to consider the Dana White Contender Series UFC fight as well. So he's a finisher, man. I mean, that's what this guy's about. I mean, more so than anything, it's on the ground with him. He's got very slick submissions. I mean, his chokes, talk about getting around your neck. I mean, if Perez gets around your neck, that anaconda choke he has is very slick. It doesn't take much for him to lock it on. And then, you know, with his technical skill and his power as well, you're in some serious trouble once he does get it on you. So not just that, though. I mean, there's more to Perez's game. He's got a little bit of wrestling to go along with some very good striking as well. I mean, he's got some power on the feet. So he's a pretty complete fighter, and he's got a lot of experience at just age 25. But you can say a lot of the same things for Shelton. In fact, I think Shelton has several advantages in this fight, especially as the fight progresses a little little bit more. I think they're going to kind of show through a little bit more as the fight goes on. Shelton also, I think, has a little bit of an edge on the feet here. He's going to be a little bit quicker. I think he's going to be a little bit more efficient with the strikes. And I think he's going to also just be a little bit better and a step ahead of Perez when it comes to the feet. Now on the ground, I expect both guys to kind of get top position. Both these guys are really solid getting takedowns and then scrambling out of bad spots and maintaining a good position for themselves. I do think as the fight progresses again, if Shelton is in a bad spot early on, I think as the fight goes on, he actually becomes the better scrambler and he ends up in top position as well, more times than not. So I think Shelton is the better pure wrestler in this spot. Perez is the more dangerous jiu-jitsu practitioner. Now his sub defense though is yet to be determined with Perez because that is a flaw of his. Now again, offensively, he can go out there and submit guys left and right, but defensively, he does leave openings and Shelton might be able to exploit that, underground as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. So to me, I think just right now where they are at this stage of their career, Shelton, especially as of late, has faced the better competition and he's been battle tested, man. I mean, if you look at some of the fighters he's been in there with, I mean, he's coming off of a much needed win over Lasau in his last fight. That wasn't an easy fight for him, but before that it was Jared Brooks and Pantoja, which were very, very close decision losses for him that could have realistically went either way. So he's got those type of split decisions. And then even before that on the show, the Ultimate Fighter, the tournament that he was in, season 24 that Tim Elliott won, I mean, he actually had a razor close decision loss on that show to Tim Elliott as well. So he's faced some top tier competition at 125 pounds and has suffered very, very close decision losses to these guys. So in my opinion, he's just a little bit further ahead. He's been battle tested. Like I said, I think he's going to be prepared for this fight and I think he's going to be consistent throughout the fight. Whereas Perez is going to have kind of lapses at times where I think Shelton could take control and take over the fight and probably win a decision on the scorecards doing so. So my pick is Shelton. It's another dog or pass situation. I just think it's going to be a competitive fight. It'll be a close fight, but I think Shelton's going to stay out of danger and he's going to probably come away with a win. So that's the way I'm going to go.
And I agree. I mean, Alex Perez is an extremely talented grappler, but I think people might be getting a little biased towards him based on his UFC debut performance because the guy he fought was not very good. I mean, Carl Johns de Thomas is not a good fighter. He's not a UFC caliber flyweight. And yeah, Perez looked great against him, but is he going to look great against a more serviceable flyweight like Shelton? I don't know. Clearly, if this fight goes to the floor and stays there and Perez is able to get some of his grappling game going, then yeah, I think that he will look pretty solid. I mean, Perez has a very strong choke game, especially from the front headlock position. Shelton does not want to be stuck in that position with Perez. Perez is willing to drop down and go for that anaconda choke on a moment's notice. I mean, he is very sneaky. He has good long arms that are capable of pulling that choke off very well. So if I'm Shelton, I just avoid the ground game almost exclusively here. I mean, it's easier said than done. I mean, when Shelton fought Jared Brooks, I mean, he got taken down about four or five times. So if Perez is able to take Shelton down and work the ground game, then this is a winnable fight for him. But I don't think Perez is that good on the feet, and Shelton is talented on the feet. And Shelton is a great athlete where if you do take him down, he should typically be able to scramble back to his feet. And if he can get back to his feet and then dish out some damage, then I think that he'll be in a really good position in this fight. Shelton, as Nick mentioned, has had some close fights that he lost in the UFC. I thought that he looked rock solid against Lausa in his last contest. He is a guy that's able to mix things up. I mean, he's capable of getting takedowns. He has a decent wrestling game, but I think he should avoid it here and just work on utilizing his power and speed on the feet to try to do some damage to Perez, punish him during stand-up exchanges, and work back to his feet or to just create distance whenever the opportunity arises, because you don't want a submission guy like Perez to get close to you and potentially lock something up. I think Shelton is going to be able to avoid those situations, and even if he does get taken down, I'm not quite sure Perez can keep him down. And I think Shelton does pull this one out. I think he might win by knockout, but more often than not, he probably wins a decision by just outworking Perez in the stand-up and avoiding being put on his back for extended periods of time. So Shelton's going to be my pick. Now moving back up to the bantamweight division, we have Rani Yahya, who is 24-9 with one no contest, taking on Russell Doan, who is 15-7. Now, Nick, where were the odds open for this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Looks like offshore lines open -285 for Yahya, the comeback on Doan at +205. And again, based on the Vegas lines, it looks like out there they were around -265, +225, so nothing drastically changed from that. And right now the current lines at BetDSI, -265 for Yahya, +215 for Doan as well. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and you're seeing two-way action in this fight. Nothing crazy either way. I think the line was okay overall, and we all know what this fight's about. If Yahya can get the fight to the ground, he's probably going to at least control Doan to en route to a decision win. If not, he probably submits Doan along the way. So Yahya has to get this fight to the floor, and by doing so, he does what he does best. And if you think about it, man, the guy is 33 years old. I mean, in MMA years, he's way above and beyond that, and he's still on a great streak recently that he's been on. The only loss as of note was obviously the fight to Joe Soto, which Soto is a very talented bantamweight in his own right. Even though he's had his struggles off and on, he's been a little inconsistent, but Soto is a very quality bantamweight to suffer a loss. So that's not even a bad loss for Yahya is what I'm trying to say. And then if you look at his resume, who he's beaten out of the group of fighters that he's faced, I mean, all really solid fighters. I mean, even though they're not in a UFC right now, like, I mean, with Tanaka, for example, a guy that really should be in the UFC, in my opinion, still. Lopez he beat, and Briones in the last fight, a solid guy. But, I mean, Yahya's just been running through these guys still at age 33. Doan, he's been up and down in his own right as well. We were expecting a lot more from him coming into the UFC, but he's kind of shown us what his, you know, his difficulties are, and a lot of it's been on the ground with fighters. So on the feet, he's not bad. He definitely has an advantage over Yahya here with the striking game. If he's able to keep off his back and stuff the takedowns from Yahya, he's going to be able to outstrike him and do some damage and possibly even knock Yahya out. Or if Doan is able to get top position on Yahya, of course, he can control things. I think Yahya is a little bit worse off his back. He can't scramble out and reverse things if Doan's not careful, but that being said, he just doesn't want to end up on his back against Yahya. But from top position, he can do some damage there, and on the feet, he can do some damage. So this is kind of a tricky spot, even though it's clear to us all out there that Yahya has a big advantage here because Doan's kryptonite does lie on the ground, and Yahya's strength is on the ground. But still, stylistically, this is an intriguing fight because I think Doan could probably do a little bit better than most of us think he's capable then in this fight. So it's kind of a head-scratcher. It's a tough one to bet, honestly, especially laying 2.5 to 1 over a guy that's kind of dangerous like Doan. But I do think Yahya gets it done here, and it is going to be the same old story with him. It's going to be his ground that gets it done. So Yahya, in my opinion, gets the submission along the way, possibly goes to scorecards and gets the decision if it does. So the pick is Yahya. It is tough to bet, so be careful if you're betting this fight.
Yeah, both guys have paths to victory here. I mean, Russell Doan is at his best when he either has some distance on the feet where he can land some heavy kicks or some punches, or if he can get top position on the ground, he actually has a long track record of solid top control ground and pound victories. That being said, I don't think he wants to go to the ground at all against Rani Yahya. I mean, Yahya is one of the best grapplers in the bantamweight division. Has a just nasty arsenal of submissions and transitions, and you name it, he's done it on the ground. So, I mean, if I'm Russell Doan, I do everything I can to keep this fight upright, land kicks, stay at distance, force Yahya to stand and trade, because he just does not win those fights. Yahya wins when he can get things going on the canvas and out-grapple his opponent. But Russell Doan, I just don't think that he can grapple with Yahya. I mean, he does have a little bit of size, a little bit of reach, and if he can utilize that, then he might be able to, you know, do some damage and maybe win a decision. But I just don't think that he keeps Yahya off of him over the course of 3 rounds. Yahya has really gone back to his roots over the last couple years. I mean, he stopped screwing around, trying to stand and bang with people at all. And, I mean, he just focuses on getting fights to the floor and working his opponents over, looking for submissions. It is exhausting at times. So, I mean, Yahya has had a bit of conditioning issues. So my other main concern is maybe Yaya has a strong start, but he can't put Doan away and Doan is able to finish him late in the fight if Yaya gets tired. But other than that happening, I think this is Yaya's fight to lose. He should be able to get this fight on the ground. I think he does out grapple Doan and he might get a submission as well. So Yaya is my pick. Now moving all the way up to the light heavyweight division for the Fight Pass headliner, we have Sam Alvey moving to light heavyweight. He is 31-10 with one no contest, taking on UFC newcomer Marcin Procneo, who is 13-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Procneo opened -280, the comeback on Alvey +200. Right now, looking over at betdsi.com, it is currently -245 for Procneo. The comeback on Alvey is at +195, so a little bit more action coming in Alvey's way. This is kind of tough. I mean, Alvey is the guy that's been experienced, to say the least, in the UFC. He's faced a lot of solid competition. We know what he's about. I mean, the guy has power in his hands. He's got decent takedown defense overall. He's durable. I mean, he comes to fight every time. The problem with Alvey is, though, at times he just gets a little bit too tentative. He doesn't throw enough. If he actually threw a little bit more, I think he would be that much further ahead in his career right now. I mean, the guy has some power. And the problem with him also is defensively, he doesn't move his head enough sometimes. I mean, he is kind of a sitting duck. He doesn't have the greatest footwork either. He's just tough as nails. He's got good counter punching and he's got power to go along with it. And again, with his experience, with his training partners, with, I mean, you know, he's just a savvy vet that has the ability to knock people out, and it's tough as nails, and it's going to show up to fight every time. So you got to respect that with Alvey. But the problem is, again, when he does get tentative, a guy like Procneo could come in and take advantage of that, because what you have in Procneo, he's making his UFC debut, obviously, but there's a lot of hype and buzz around him as a prospect as well. He's 29 years old, so he's not on the younger end of things, but at the same time, you know, in MMA years, he's still fairly young and he's still got a lot left in the tank, that's for sure. And he's only going to get better. And he does have a karate background. Now, the level of competition that he's faced before he's entered the UFC has been a little bit shaky. I mean, if you look at some of the European fighters, they're okay. Their resumes might seem to be okay, but if you dig a little bit deeper, I think those guys were weak, especially compared to level competition Alvey's faced in his career thus far. So if you're going to compare resumes, Alvey's way ahead of Procneo at this point of his career. But Procneo, again, with that karate background, I mean, he's world class. He's got precision. He's got accuracy. He's got speed. He's got power. I mean, he is a very dangerous fighter, to say the least. Now, with all that comes bad defense, though, at times, because Procneo does leave his chin up at times. He does leave his hands low at times, and he is susceptible to getting countered. So if Alvey can time things right, I mean, I think he can do some damage here against Procneo as well. But more than likely, Procneo is going to be the one getting off first. He's going to be the one kind of pushing forward. Alvey's going to be the one kind of sitting back waiting to do that counter strike. And it might be a little bit too late, because Procneo is the type of explosive fighter that if he lands, he's got enough power that he can do damage right away with one strike, two strikes, a kick. I mean, he's just a very well-versed striker on the feet that is a little bit unorthodox, but at the same time does have some clean technical skill as well and power to go along with it. So this is a tough one for me, because I think Alvey probably does have a little bit of value as an underdog here, but at the same time, with his ability to not throw enough and just kind of be a sitting duck at times, I don't know if that's a good matchup for him here against Procneo. So I'm going to pick Procneo to win, but I wouldn't lay the juice either here, man. This is a tough spot, because I think he is going to fight the best fighter that he's faced in his career so far in Alvey, and it's going to be a test for him. I mean, it might be a test that Procneo passes with flying colors, but it's yet to be determined. And I think laying chalk or almost 2.5-1 on Procneo in his UFC debut over a savvy vet, tough vet like Alvey, is not a great idea. So the pick is Procneo to win, probably by decision, because Alvey does survive, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does land that knockout blow on Alvey along the way either. So the pick is Procneo. I'm hoping that we see a good performance from him, and then he becomes a more legit light heavyweight. And I should mention that this fight is at light heavyweight as well. Alvey is bumping up. He normally fights at middleweight. So he is taking this fight on a little bit shorter notice, and he's bumping up to light heavyweight to fight with Procneo. So that comes a little bit into play as well. But the pick is Procneo. Let's see what he's made of here against Alvey.
This is a pretty simple fight to break down, to be honest. I mean, Sam Alvey's a guy that has power, basically one punch knockout power. but he tends to sit back way too often in fights and let his opponent dictate things. So if Procneo is going to be the aggressor in this fight and push a high tempo, and if he's able to keep that high tempo, unless Alvi knocks him out cold, I don't see how Alvi wins this fight. Procneo comes from a bit of a karate background. So, I mean, he has some excellent kicks. He has fast hands. He's explosive. He does have a little bit of height and reach advantage on Alvi. And obviously, being a natural light heavyweight, he should be the bigger, stronger guy. Alvi, I mean, at one point he made 170 pounds. So, I mean, he's kind of taken the Anthony Johnson route here, moving all the way up to light heavyweight now, which I don't know why he needed to go to light heavyweight. I mean, I didn't think that middleweight was that big of a problem for him. So, against a guy like Procneo, I mean, that's just going to present some of the problems that Alvi is going to have to deal with if he actually wants to stay at this division, because Procneo is big, he's strong, he's powerful, and, you know, Alvi's going to be at a lot of physical disadvantages, and he's going to have to use some of his, you know, veteran instincts to make up for him. The one thing with Procneo is he's a bit untested with the ground game, with submissions, and while, you know, that's not Alvi's forte, I mean, he has pulled off some submissions in the UFC, most notably against Spicely, so I do think that, you know, if Alvi can put Procneo in a bad position on the ground, there could be opportunities to finish the fight there. That being said, in stand-up exchanges, Alvi is just too tentative and lets his opponent dictate things way too much for him to win a stand-up exchange. I think Procneo just works him over on the feet and probably could knock him out. Alvi does have the power to potentially hurt Procneo as well, but I think, you know, Procneo has a much more diverse striking skill set, and he can really dish out some punishment in this fight if Alvi allows him to, which he typically does. So I'm going to side with Procneo. I think that the UFC newcomer has some success on the feet, but I mean, if Alvi can mix things up, then this fight gets interesting in a hurry. But Procneo is going to be my pick. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Ben Saunders, who is 21-8-2, taking on Alan Joban, who is 15-6. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Joban opened -215, the comeback on Saunders at +165. Right now, looking over BetDSI, it's actually -270 right now for Joban, and the comeback on Saunders is at +220. So line has inflated a little bit. There's more action coming in on Joban. I mean, this is another tough one because you have the battle of guys that you cannot trust as far as chins go at this point in their career. I mean, you have Joban, who's 35 years old. You have Saunders, who's 34 years old. And both these guys are way past that, especially in MMA years. I mean, Saunders, especially. He's had a lot of wars. He's had a lot of tough opponents throughout his career. So you have two aging vets here that are going at it. And again, you cannot trust either's chin. I mean, that seems to be the kryptonite for both parties here. Saunders overall, though, I think, you know, he's always overperformed. He's always a threat because of his length, because of his skill set. I mean, the guy has some good striking. He's got some good kicks. He's got some good knees. He's able to beat a lot of opponents on the feet. On the ground, you put him on his back, he gives you fits because it's jiu-jitsu. It's with his length, with his technique. So Saunders is a very complete fighter and a very dangerous fighter. He's capable of finishing the fight anywhere it takes place. And again, I think you always have to give a guy like that respect. But unfortunately for him, against good grappling-based fighters that can avoid his submission game, obviously they can control him, get him down, and usually kind of out-wrestle him to a decision. Or if he's fighting devastating strikers that can kind of have decent defense and get around that length a little bit, they catch his chin and knock him out. So that's the flaws with Saunders. Joban, on the other hand, man, offensively, the guy is fun to watch. I mean, he has precision striking. He's got power. He's got speed. He's actually got okay defense overall on the feet. He's got decent takedown defense as well. So he's a pretty complete fighter in his own right. He's not an easy guy to sub. Now, of course, if you hurt him first and his chin goes, I mean, for a lot of these guys, you can hop on their back and sub them fairly quick. So, but overall, Jermaine is a tough guy to sub. So I think it's going to come down to who makes the first mistake here and whose chin holds up. So I'm trusting Jermaine just a little bit more in this case because I do think, again, technically speaking, he's a little bit better defensively, and I think I trust his chin just slightly more than Saunders at this stage in the game. But, I mean, there's no way I can have confidence with either guy significantly here either way. So I do think it's another spot where it's a dog or pass situation, and maybe people are underestimating Saunders in this spot because Saunders lands first. He could put Jermaine out, and so he's not going to be an easy out. So this is a tough one to pick. I'm going to lean slightly towards Jermaine, but I don't agree with the action coming in more towards Jermaine in this spot because, like I said, I don't know if you could trust either guy. So hard to bet this fight. I lean Jermaine, but we'll see how it all plays out.
And I completely agree that the first big strike could decide this fight. I mean, Alan Jermaine and Ben Saunders are long, capable strikers, and they both have power, and they both have pretty weak chins. So if either one of them gets in trouble, both men have the capability of pursuing a finish and getting the finish. That being said, I think that Alan Jermaine has a little bit more finishing ability. His hands are a little bit better than Ben Saunders. Saunders is a little bit more reliant on his Muay Thai game and distance kicking game. And potentially Saunders is a little bit more reliant, at least these days, on his grappling. And I think if Jermaine doesn't want this fight to go to the ground, it's not going to go to the ground unless he gets hurt first. So with Ben Saunders, I feel like maybe he's on in a bit more of a decline at this stage of his career than Jermaine is. I think Jermaine does have a little bit more to prove. Granted, Jermaine has lost two in a row. He hasn't looked particularly good getting hurt and finished in back-to-back fights. But I think that against somebody that's not quite as explosive as his last couple opponents in Saunders, Jermaine should be able to see the heavy strikes coming and either block them or get out of the way and then dish them back out. So I think this is a favorable matchup for Jermaine, although you always have to be concerned when you're backing a fighter that doesn't have good durability. But I think Jermaine can avoid the heavy strikes from Saunders, but still dish out his own. And I think that at some point he does hurt Saunders and probably puts him away. So Jermaine is my pick. Now dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Marina Moroz, who is 8-2, taking on Angela Hill, who is 7-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Moroz opened minus 140, the comeback on Hill, even money at plus 100. Right now, looking over betdsi.eu, it is currently Hill minus 160, the comeback on Moroz at plus 130. I think that's a little bit more accurate, to say the least, right now. I mean, Moroz is definitely a talented fighter. She is working that stand-up game to the point where it's definitely getting better, but she's more known for her grappling game, and she does have some slick submissions. She's got that length to go along with it, especially for 115 pounds. I mean, she's not an easy out in most cases, and she does like to push forward, likes to work behind her lead jab, and again, she's improving her stand-up where she's getting a little bit more aggressive, getting a little bit more confidence. But if you watch her striking, it's a little robotic. It's a little telling. And I think a fighter like Hill, who specializes in the striking department, is going to be able, especially as the fight progresses, to exploit Moroz's striking. And even though she has some length and it's probably going to be difficult at first to get inside, Hill will find her way inside. And with her combinations and with her striking, she's going to have her way again, I think, and outpoint and land fairly decent on Moroz along the way. So I think that it's by far Hill's fight to win or lose here on the feet. Hill does have to be careful though, because if Moroz is able to get her back or get her to the ground, then obviously Moroz is a serious threat and she could win this fight with her submission game. I mean, that's an area that it seems to be Hill's kryptonite. Now she is improving. She's getting better. We've seen noticeable improvements on the ground with her, and her submission defense has gotten better. She's not giving up her back as much, which is obviously a good sign because, you know, a spot against a very good grappler, you don't want to do that. So I think Hill's going to be smart enough. She's going to be experienced enough, and she's at that point in that stage of her career where a fighter like Moreau's shouldn't really exploit her weakness because she doesn't have that wrestling or she doesn't have that takedown game to really get the fight to the floor and just go crazy and dominate Hill on the ground like she might be able to if she gets in that spot. So I think Hill here is going to sprawl, brawl, keep the fight upright. And then, like I said, as the fight progresses, I think it's going to be noticeably that Hill comes forward and it starts landing a little bit more precise and a little bit more clear, and she wins the rounds a little bit more decisively. So the pick here is Hill. I think, you know, that the line, if those of you guys that got on even money for Hill, I think you made a great move there. There's still probably a little bit of value left at minus 160 or so on Angela Hill as well, because I do think that, again, it's just stylistically it's a good spot for her, even though she's going to be on the shorter side. She makes up for that length by her skill. I mean, she's used to fighting taller fighters as well, so I don't think that length is going to matter too much, and she's just simply the better striker. So it's going to be Hill by striking that gets the W here in this spot.
For me, this fight boils down to Angela Hill's work rate, which she does throw at a higher volume of strikes than Meraz. That being said, she was kind of forced to because of her fight with Jessica Andrade, which was just a back-and-forth slugfest where she just got overwhelmed a little bit. Meraz, on the other hand, you know, she picks and chooses her spots. I mean, she has shown some decent striking so far in her UFC career. Nothing amazing, but I think the most impressive performance was when she hurt Joanne Calderwood early in the fight and then pulled off a submission. You know, you look at some of her other performances and she got outstruck by Valerie Letourneau. And then I thought, you know, the Danielle Taylor fight could have gone either way. I mean, it really was not that impressive of a performance. So they both kind of were staring at each other for three rounds. And that's just not how you're going to be able to win a fight against Angela Hill, because Hill's going to be in Meraz's face. Hill is, you know, she's not the most powerful striker, but she does have a little bit of heat on her punches. She sits down on them. She has confidence in her hands. So if Hill is able to get her boxing going, then even though Meraz does have some decent striking ability, I think Hill will outwork her in the stand-up and either win a decision or potentially hurt her. Meraz was dropped by Letourneau, so it's not out of the realm of possibility that Hill could get a finish. The biggest advantage in this fight is probably the ground game. I mean, Meraz does have pretty nasty arm bars on the canvas, but she does not have very good ability to get the fight to the floor. So unless Hill makes a big mistake and slips or like completely overcommits so obviously that she basically surrenders the easiest takedown ever, then I don't see how Meraz can get this fight to the floor to utilize some of her grappling advantages. So I think Angela Hill will be the faster fighter. I think that she'll have a little bit more zip in her punches. I think that she'll be throwing more often. And I think that she'll be doing enough to win rounds on the judges' scorecards against Meraz. So my pick is going to be Angela Hill. Now moving up to the women's bantamweight division, we have Sarah McMahon, who is 11-4, taking on Marion Renault, who is 8-3-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
McMahon opened minus 195, the comeback, and Renault plus 160. And right now, looking over at betdsi.eu, it is currently minus 240 for McMahon, and the comeback on Renault is at plus 190. So more action coming in McMahon's way. Not really surprised by that. I mean, if you look at McMahon's performances as of late, she's been awesome. I mean, I know she had a setback against Vieira in her last fight, so kind of throw that out the window. I mean, not taking anything away from Vieira, obviously, that's – I think Vieira is a future contender and a future possible title holder in the UFC, so that's how good Vieira is. So that's not necessarily a bad loss. But outside of that, before that loss, I mean, her wins were awesome for McMahon. I mean, she has a solid win over Jessica Eye. Nobody manhandles. You can say what you want about Jessica Eye, but nobody's really physically dominated Jessica Eye like McMahon did. So that tells you the power that McMahon has, getting her takedowns and utilizing her ground and pound that she does. And then, of course, I mean, submitting Alexis Davis. That was impressive as well for McMahon. It got her confidence rolling, and then her win over Mazzani wasn't really a shocker there. So she had a lot of good momentum going her way where she needed to, because, man, that devastating submission loss to Nunes where she got drilled on the feet and then, you know, got choked out there, that was a confidence just derailer there for sure. And I mean, you know, and a lot of people might have thought that we saw McMahon on a bit of a decline coming off back-to-back losses like she did against Tayta Nunes, but she definitely got back on track and beat very solid competition on her way again to kind of making a run towards the bantamweight title here as well. But she got derailed a little bit by Vieira, but in Renault, she has another opportunity to kind of get back on track against a very respectable opponent. But Renault is definitely a tough test too, because stylistically, the way she matches up with McMahon on the feet, it's going to be close. McMahon's striking is definitely getting better. She's getting more confidence with it, and you have to respect her power because she has that wrestler's power. But outside of that, I think Renault is the more diverse striker on the feet, and I think she's just a little bit better. So I think Renault can land a little bit more often, a little bit cleaner on the feet, and have a little bit more success doing so. Now, McMahon will probably look to take this fight to the floor, but Renault off her back has shown that she attacks. She doesn't just lay there and accept being put on her back. I mean, she'll go for submissions. She transitions, tries to look to get up and out as well. So she can throw up a lot of submissions and possibly, you know, get McMahon caught up in a triangle or an armbar or of that nature, or possibly even scramble to McMahon's back. So Renault's dangerous anywhere the fight takes place. So I don't know if this is necessarily a good spot to be laying a lot of chalk on McMahon or betting her up like the action has come in early. I think this is going to be a competitive fight. Of course, McMahon is going to be the bully. She's going to be the stronger fighter, and it is her fight to win or lose. But Renault is going to be dangerous. And if you're going to bet this fight, I think it's one of those situations out there that you might want to look at this dog here in Renault, or possibly a prop bet on Renault inside the distance, because I think that's probably more of the accurate way she does get the job done here. So I expect McMahon to win on the cards if it goes three, and it probably does. If that's the case, I'm going to lean McMahon, and I'm going to pick her to win because she should kind of have the edge, obviously, on the scorecards here. But it's going to be a tough fight, and Renault is going to be dangerous. So expect a lot of finishing attempts by Renault to be thrown at McMahon here along the way. So the pick is McMahon, but not a confident one.
And I agree that McMahon should win this fight. She is just the more physical, aggressive, and stronger fighter, and Marion Renault does not have very good takedown defense. I mean, you saw that in her last fight. I mean, she got taken down repeatedly. I mean, thankfully, her opponent had horrific conditioning, and Renault was just able to outlast her a little bit and then pick up a late TKO victory. But against somebody like McMahon that does not gas in fights, I think Renault's in a lot more trouble. I mean, McMahon will get takedowns and is going to put Marion Renault on her back at some point in this fight, probably in every single round. What Renault does after that is really what's going to decide who wins or loses this fight. If Renault can get back to her feet and dish out some damage, that's great. If Renault can put McMahon in some submission holds, that's also pretty great. I mean, McMahon does not have the greatest submission defense. I mean, we've seen her choked out or submitted a couple times now inside the octagon. So I would not be shocked if Renault catches her with something. Renault does have some decent length, and she has caught opponents with a triangle choke in the past. So McMahon could get caught in a triangle choke if she's a little too over-enthusiastic with her takedowns. Renault does come from a grappling background before she actually started striking. So, I can see McMahon getting herself in some trouble, but that being said, as long as she is cautious with her takedowns and not overly aggressive and leaving openings, then she should pull this fight out. I mean, yeah, Marion Renault's the better striker, but how long is this fight going to be staying standing? I mean, Sarah McMahon is a very good wrestler, and she knows that wrestling, ground and pound, maybe, you know, getting in some submissions of her own are the path to victory. And she did pull off a submission against Alexis Davis, which surprised me. So I wouldn't be shocked if she is able to overpower Marion Renault and find something as well. So my pick's going to be Sarah McMahon. And realistically, the only way I see Renault winning this fight is by catching McMahon in something from her back, which I think is easier said than done. So McMahon is my pick. Now moving on to the Fox preliminary card headliner, we have former Bantamweight champion Hayden Barrow, who is 36-5 with one no contest, taking on Brian Kelleher, who is 18-8. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Barrow open minus 160, the comeback on Kelleher plus 120. Right now, looking over betdsi.eu, it is currently Barrow minus 156, the comeback on Kelleher at plus 126. So again, line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two action coming into this fight. Crazy that Barrow is only a minus 160 favorite or so, minus 156 favorite right now against Kelleher. I mean, who would have thought that, honestly, a few years ago, that Barrow would, you know, not disrespecting Kelleher at all, but, you know, kind of a journeyman fighter that has made his way into the UFC that deserves to be there. And Kelleher obviously pulling off some wins and has kind of, you know, caught his groove. That's why he even got his UFC opportunity. So he's a very good fighter. But Barrow was on a different level. I mean, we were talking about him being one of the pound-for-pound greats, for crying out loud. What a decline he's hit. So the odds are that competitive for a good reason. It is going to be a competitive fight. That's what's kind of a head-scratcher to me as well, because Barrow, I mean, technically speaking, the guy has great striking. He's got really good wrestling, and he's got great jiu-jitsu. I mean, his jiu-jitsu game probably is severely underrated at this point of his career. I mean, let's not forget what this guy is capable of underground, but he hasn't produced his best showing for a long time. I mean, Barrow has, again, been on a decline. He's starting to gas a lot sooner in fights, so he's not putting his foot on the gas. I mean, his chin is a little bit more susceptible. His defense is worse. He's just sloppier. So he's definitely hit that decline spot, and Kelleher is not going to be an easy opponent for him. I mean, he pushes a high pace. Obviously, what Kelleher is more well-known for than anything else is his submission game, honestly. I mean, if he gets around your neck, you're in some serious trouble. He's got that wrestler's grip with great technique, and he's hit that guillotine choke so often that it's like second nature to him. So even if you're a guy, a BJJ black belt, a high-level black belt like Barrow, if he gets around your neck, if Kelleher gets around your neck, you can be in some serious trouble. So you want to make sure you're aware of that. I think Barrow will be, obviously, because that's one of Kelleher's main weapons, but Kelleher has other submissions. I mean, he's smooth on the ground, so Barrow has to be very careful if he does go for these takedowns and looks for the ground battle with Kelleher. But even on the feet, Kelleher pushes such a high pace. I mean, he's the type of fighter that his gas tank is pretty good, and he just continues to come at you. I mean, even if it's round three and, you know, and your fighters typically start to slow down, Kelleher's still coming at you 110%. I mean, so with Barrow fading as the fight progresses as of late, I don't think that's going to be a good situation for him as the fight progresses. So I think what we're going to see here early on is Barrow probably being the front runner, getting off to a good start, but Kelleher is going to close the gap as the fight progresses and probably make it an interesting fight on the cards if it gets to the cards. Now, both these guys are capable of finishing each other. Like I said, I think Barrow honestly could finish Kelleher still. If anything flawed or anything bad in Kelleher's game, it's again, it's his sub defense. I mean, he does make some bonehead mistakes on the ground sometimes, and he gets caught up in some traps. So Barrow is more than capable of finishing Kelleher on the ground. But again, if Kelleher does not get finished, then if it hits the scorecards, it's probably going to be a very competitive fight. So Barrow, I lean towards him a little bit because I still think he has enough left in the tank to beat a fighter like Kelleher. But again, at this point, to lay chalk on Barrow from what we've seen lately, it's pretty difficult to do. So tough one to bet again. I lean Barrow to get the W and maybe even finish Kelleher along the way. But we'll see how it goes. And hopefully Barrow shows us a little glimpse of what he used to be and not fading and just putting on an impressive performance. Cause man, I really miss watching that Barrow fight, to be honest with you.
Yeah, this fight boils down to whether or not Hayden Barrow has much left in the tank or not. I mean, at one point, I mean, it wasn't even that long ago, he was in the debate for the best pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. And then he lost to TJ Dillashaw twice and then moved up a weight class, and that didn't work out for him. Moved down, back down to bantamweight, and that didn't really work out for him. In his at least return against Sterling. So now he's taking on Brian Kelleher, and you know, Kelleher's, you know, not an easy fight here. I mean, in his debut he submitted Yuri Alcantara, and then in his last fight he, you know, scored a TKO victory over Damian Stasiak. So you cannot underrate Brian Kelleher. That being said, As talented as Kelleher is capable of being, he is more of an all offense, not much defense type of guy. So I can see Hayden Burrow knocking Kelleher out on the feet. I can see Hayden Burrow submitting Kelleher on the ground. It just all comes down to Hayden Burrow and how much energy he's willing to expend. I know conditioning has probably been the biggest issue with Burrow. He does slow down in fights. Granted, this is a 3-round fight, so I'm hoping that he can stay conditioned for 15 minutes. But, I mean, in his last fight against Aljamain Sterling, he started pretty strong in the first round and then just ran out of steam and got outworked and lost a decision. So against Kelleher, I mean, if he starts out strong, he needs to keep that pace going. I mean, you have to fight like, you know, there's no tomorrow. And sometimes he just doesn't do that. So another issue with Burrow, obviously, is his chin isn't very good anymore. So while Kelleher isn't known for being a devastating striker, I mean, he does have a little bit of pop in his hands. And if Burrow gets lazy, then there's going to be an opening for Kelleher to land some damage. That being said, Burrow's stand-up offensively is pretty good. So, I mean, he should be able to outwork Kelleher on the feet. And then if and when this fight goes to the ground, Burrow should have the advantage. I mean, I know Kelleher can pull off submissions, but I don't see anybody out grappling Hayden Burrow. And, Burrow at some point probably can put Kelleher in a bad position and tap him out if it goes to the floor and he's able to work his grappling game. So this is Burrow's fight to lose, but it just all depends on if he is still a fighter capable of making a run in the division, because I mean, it's just almost sad to see the former champ, you know, not even, you know, that far removed from being champ, and he's not even ranked in the top 15 anymore. So, you know, this is a fight to kind of see where Burrow is in the division and if he is capable of being a contender again. So my pick is going to be Burrow, and I think that's more because I'm more optimistic as a person about his future. Now, moving on to the Fox main card, we have a welterweight contest between Mike Perry, who is 11-2, and Max Griffin, who is 13-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Perry open -230, the comeback on Griffin at +170. Right now, looking over at betdsi.eu, it is currently -360 for Perry, and the comeback on Griffin is at +280. So more support coming in Perry's way. I'm not really that surprised. I mean, stylistically, how these guys match up, Perry does have a striking advantage, and he, with his wrestling, he should be able to keep the fight upright. Even though Griffin does have a little bit of power in the feet, as he displayed against Montano, in his knockout win and his only win in the UFC thus far, Perry has shown better defense than I originally gave him credit for when he first entered the UFC. I think Perry has really found his groove. He's getting better fight by fight. He's getting better mentally, physically. He's got more confidence as well. So Perry's at a good place right now. And I think that it's going to be hard for Griffin to kind of derail Perry at this point, and especially how they match up. Like I said, I think Griffin kind of needs to get this fight to the ground to have a little bit more success. He does have knockout power, and if Perry leaves himself exposed, I mean, Griffin has enough power to put him down, but more than likely it's going to be Perry doing the damage along the way. It's going to be Perry stuffing the takedowns and keeping this fight upright, and I think basically that's what he does to win this fight. He outpoints Griffin, if not finishing him along the way. So the Perry hype train is going to kind of continue to roll here. I think a lot of fans get behind him for good reason. I know he's coming off of a tough decision loss to Ponzinibbio, but Ponzinibbio is an elite striker, and Perry was competitive in that fight, to say the least. He had his moments, that's for sure. So I think he bounces back here with an impressive win over Griffin, and it might be a finish. So he could have himself another highlight reel type of finish as well. So this is stylistically, I think, a difficult matchup for Griffin, so I lean a little bit more towards Perry in this fight, and that's who I'm going to pick to win.
Yeah, Mike Perry, Max Griffin, both guys have a lot of knockout power. Neither guy is the most durable. So I could see this fight going either way. It just really comes down to who lands that first big shot. That being said, while they both are powerful. I think in terms of pure striking ability, Mike Perry is the better striker of the two. He fights a little bit longer. He has shown some improvement with his defense. While he does get hit and hurt in fights, he actually avoids damage at a much higher rate than Griffin. And he pushes a higher pace than Griffin. So I think this is a pretty good stylistic matchup for Perry. I mean, he should be able to get his hands going. I mean, Perry mixes up things well with his knees, with elbows. I mean, he's a dangerous fighter. And while Griffin does have power, I think that he relies a little bit too much on his athleticism and his ability to get in quick and land damage than being able to sustain damage over the course of a full round. So unless Griffin is able to step inside and really hurt Perry and follow up quickly, then I think Perry just outworks him over the course of three rounds, potentially gets a knockout along the way. I just think this is a, even though both of these guys are strikers, I think it favors Mike Perry here because of his defense and the volume of strikes that he throws. So Mike Perry is going to be my pick. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Ovince St. Preux, who is 22-10, taking on Ilir Latifi, who is 14-5 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
OSP open minus 135, the comeback in Latifi minus 105, and right now looking over at betdsi.eu, it is currently OSP minus 125, the comeback on Latifi minus 105. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. About a pick-em fight with a slight lean towards OSP, and I think it's right. I mean, you have two top-tier light heavyweights going out of here. Both of these guys have had their moments throughout their UFC runs, and they've kind of made it towards the top tier of the light heavyweights for a reason. I mean, both of these guys have power on the feet. They're capable of finishing opponents by knockout. Obviously, for OSP, he's got a lot of length for the division. He's athletic. He has a ton of power. He can knock you out with his kicks. He can knock you out with his knees. He can knock you out with his hands. So he's got a lot of ability to finish fights. And then, of course, on the ground, I mean, he's got that Von Flue choke that he's hit a few times. I mean, he's got an underrated submission game as well. So OSP's a handful to deal with. But at times, his conditioning, I'm not so thrilled with. He does kind of slow up. His defense at times on the feet can be sloppy. He leaves himself wide open as well. So he does have his flaws, and he does have his moments where you can get through. And a guy like Latifi, even though he's going to have to overcome a lot of reach, he might be able to get inside. And if he does and he starts landing on OSP, then he's got enough power to do some damage, that's for sure. And Latifi also has a pretty decent takedown game. Now, OSP's not the easiest guy to get on the floor, but as we've seen in the past, I mean, really good wrestlers have been able to get him down and utilize the ground game against OSP as well, controlling him and getting some takedowns and that sort of thing. So maybe Latifi does that. I think it's going to be difficult for him here, though, the way these guys match up. But I do think it's going to be a competitive fight. Both these guys can hurt each other, like I said, on the feet. Both of you guys are explosive enough and talented enough to get the job done. So I can see it going back and forth a little bit. And both these guys are a little bit susceptible when it comes to chins as well. So with power and a little bit of a suspect chin, there's definitely concern either way here. But I just think the length of OSP is going to come into play. He's going to be the more physical fighter here. I think he's going to be able to utilize that kicking game and hopefully use his distance the proper way to keep Latifi on the outside and then, you know, do some damage and kind of pick him off and pick him apart and possibly even knock Latifi out. So I'm going to pick OSP. I just think the intangibles there with his length and his skill and his size and being such a close fight that a lot of that's going to kind of be the difference maker, I think, in this fight personally. So can never count Latifi out though, man, because like I said, I respect the guy a lot. I've seen what he's able to accomplish when he's on. I mean, he's tough to beat at light heavyweight in the UFC, that's for sure. So not an easy win for OSP, but I do think he gets it done here.
While OSP does have the physical advantages in this fight, I mean, clearly, I mean, he's got 7 inches in reach, 5 inches in height. He's got the longer legs. So during prolonged stand-up exchanges, I mean, if he fights long, then Ilir Latifi's going to be in some problems. But that being said, Latifi is the more technical striker of the two. I think his stand-up, he has heavy hands that are with decent boxing ability. I mean, we've seen him utilize that against John Volante, a guy that had another big physical advantages over him. And Latifi was just able to overcome those by using his speed and technical ability. But potentially where Latifi could shine in this fight is with the grappling. I mean, he does come from a grappling background, and he utilized that in the Tyson Pedro fight, facing a guy that was a bigger opponent than himself. He was able to get inside, get takedowns, repeatedly dump Pedro on his back and wear him down a little bit over the course of three rounds and easily won a decision. So that was a rock solid performance for Latifi. I mean, he had four takedowns, four guard passes. He outstruck Pedro. So that being said, Pedro wasn't as much of a threat on the feet. So, Ovince St. Preux definitely is. I mean, he's got power. His left hand is vicious. And if Latifi's not careful, he could eat that and be in big trouble in a hurry. But if he can get inside and drag OSP to the ground, then Latifi has a pretty solid path to victory here. I mean, he can get takedowns, get top position, win rounds, and do damage from top position. And OSP is not exactly known for having amazing conditioning. So I think Latifi could just wear him down with takedown attempts and aggression. So in prolonged stand-up exchanges, yeah, Ovince St. Preux should get the better of those and might even hurt Latifi along the way. But if Latifi can close the distance and turn this into more of a mixed martial arts fight and utilize that ground game, then I think that there is a path to victory for him. And even though he doesn't come from a wrestling background, he is extremely physically powerful. And, I mean, he's built like a fire hydrant. And if he can get inside, then Ovince St. Preux isn't going to be able to do a lot of damage. So I think Latifi might be able to pull this off. So I'm going to side with him. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the women's strawweight division, we have a likely number one contenders fight between Jessica Andrade, who is 17-6, and Tisha Torres, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Andrade opened -290, the comeback on Torres at +210. Right now, looking over at betdsi.eu, currently Andrade -319, the comeback on Torres at +254. So more action coming in Andrade's way. It's tough to say because you don't typically see Torres hovering at around, you know, +250s, +260s out there. That's not the case. I mean, she is definitely one of the best female fighters at 115 pounds in the world. She's been for a long time. We know what she's capable of. I mean, she was kind of the favorite to win the Ultimate Fighter as well in most of our minds. I mean, we thought she was, I mean, the total package. Her takedown defense was up to par. Obviously, she's a really good striker, tough as nails, can keep a high pace, all of the above. But the problem is on the show, she got the Ultimate Fighter show, she got exploited a little bit on the ground. She was able to get taken down. Her takedown defense didn't kind of live up to what we all expected. And since that time, I mean, that's kind of seemed to be her kryptonite a little bit as well. So Torres, even though she does have pretty decent takedown defense, it's not like she has bad takedown defense, but that is kind of a way that she has been struggling in fights from time to time. Now Andrade, man, what could you say? I mean, I was – my jaw dropped when I seen her performance against Gadella. Now, of course, you know, Gadella doesn't have the best gas tank, so as the fight progressed, I wasn't surprised to see her kind of slowing down. But Andrade's pace and the beating she put on Gadella as that fight went on was more than impressive because, in my opinion – Gadella was the best and the most talented fighter in the division, including the champion Jan Jacek at that time. But I'm saying that because her cardio, Gadella's cardio, is the only thing that really truly hindered her, in my opinion, even in the title fights that she had against Jan Jacek. So that was her kryptonite. And Andrade, in a three-round fight, was able to clearly get the win over her. So that went a long way, in my opinion. So she solidified herself as the second-best fighter in the weight class. And now with Jan Jacek out of the way, Andrade very well might be the best fighter in at 115 pounds in the female division right now. She has, again, kind of the total package. Has a ton of power on the feet. She's aggressive, pushes a high pace. I think this weight cut to 115 pounds has actually improved her cardio as well, because she could keep this up. I mean, there's no question that she could keep going. I mean, for five rounds if needed. So Andrade has a lot of things to like about her. Now, her takedown game is actually a bit underrated. She's so strong that she's able to ragdoll people to the ground as well. And that might be the deciding factor if she does beat Torres. Is on the feet, it's going to be close. I mean, it's going to be Andrade being the aggressor and landing more powerful shots. But Torres is actually, I think, the more complete striker. She's going to be moving and probably landing on her own as well, and might actually outstrike Andrade on the feet. But Andrade mixes in a takedown or two along the way, and that could be the difference of winning or losing this fight. So I do think the line is high right now. I don't think it should be up to 3-1, but it's tough to pick against Andrade in this spot, because what she's shown us lately and her improvements, I mean, across the board, and where she's at mentally in her career, I mean, she's on another level right now, and it's going to be hard for a lot of these ladies to catch up to her, even if you're as talented as Torres is. So the pick is going to be Andrade here, but I do think it is a dog or pass situation. And if Torres is able to keep off her back in this fight enough, she could pull this out and pull off an upset, because styles make fights. And stylistically, again, if Torres doesn't spend too much time on her back, she is a tough matchup for Andrade. So it is a dog or pass situation, but I am going to lean a little bit more towards Andrade to get the W, because I do think that she can and probably will edge out the scorecards here.
This has the potential to be an extremely competitive fight. That being said, Jessica Andrade and Tisha Torres, I mean, I actually think Tisha Torres is the better striker of the two. Torres is pretty technical and mixes things up very well. Andrade is a little bit more focused on volume and aggression and pushing forward. And that works against fighters that don't have as much of a technical skill set, that are a bit more of a brawler or maybe a grappler that's still learning the ropes in the striking department. But I think against somebody like Tisha Torres, then I think Jessica Andrade can get outstruck in this fight and actually could get hurt in this fight. But where Andrade has the biggest edge is probably her physicality. I mean, she's won fights against legit women's bantamweights. I mean, Raquel Pennington is probably fighting for the title next against Amanda Nunes, and Jessica Andrade beat her the first time they fought because she outworked her on the feet. So, you know, Jessica Andrade is definitely capable of winning against just about anybody in the women's strawweight division. And I thought that she put on the best performance of her career in her last fight against Claudia Gadelha. After a close first round, Andrade just turned it on and just repeatedly took Gadelha down and was able to win a decision. And against Tisha Torres, that's probably her path to victory. I know Andrade is known for her aggression and pace on the feet, but against somebody like Torres, I don't think that that will work. And where Torres has had her issues throughout her time in the UFC and in her time on The Ultimate Fighter, it's been when fighters are able to take her down. Randa Markos did it on Tough. Carla Esparza did it on Tough. And then in her last fight, Michelle Waterson even won a round by getting top position on the ground. So if Jessica Andrade can get takedowns and keep Torres on her back, she can win rounds. Torres still, as much work as she has been putting in to improve that part of her game, that's still her biggest weakness by a significant margin. So that's Jessica Andrade's path to victory, because if this stays standing, I think Torres actually can win it. But with the fact that Andrade can mix in those takedowns, and then you factor in her just tenacious aggression, I don't think that she gives up on the takedowns unless there's an injury or something. So I think that the takedowns will be the deciding factor. So Jessica Andrade is going to be my pick. Now, last but not least, we have the main event of the evening in the featherweight division between Josh Emmett, who is 13-1, and Jeremy Stevens, who is 26-14. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Stevens Open -130, the comeback on Emmett -110. Right now looking over at BetDSI, it is currently -165 for Stevens, +135 for Emmett. So more action coming in Stevens' way. Man, that performance that he just came off of recently against Choi was more than impressive. I mean, Choi definitely a up-and-coming prospect that they were kind of matching up in the spot. And, of course, Stevens picks him off. I mean, and impressively, to say the least, as well. So Stevens, we all know what he's made of. I mean, he's been around the UFC for a long time. And the crazy thing is, I think, I mean, he's had so many fights in the UFC, and you can still push this guy towards a title shot at 145 pounds, as crazy as that is. I mean, he's faced basically the top tier guys in the division overall. And he, you know, he suffered some losses. I mean, if you look back, you know, he lost to Edgar, he lost to Holloway, of course, he lost to Swanson, to just to name a few. But I mean, you could kind of recycle Stevens because he's got so much explosive power, and he's such an exciting fighter to watch each and every time that he steps into the cage, that he gets on a little win streak, you can make him relevant again. So, I mean, they're feeding him prospects to, I think, as a stepping stone for these prospects like Choi to get a win over Stevens. And then you kind of get launched that next level. Same thing here with Emmett, you know, get a win over Stevens, you get launched that next level as well. But if Stevens keeps getting these wins over these prospects, he continues to kind of climb that ladder and gets back in the mix as well. So that's what I'm talking about. You could kind of, he's still relevant. I mean, after all these fights at the UFC, and he's still very dangerous. So hats off to Stevens for kind of, in my opinion, kind of hitting his prime right now, because again, mentally, physically, everything is kind of coming into his own. He's never been more confident. He knows what he's about. He loves fighting. So you got to, again, take your hat off to him. But he's facing a very dangerous opponent here in Emmett. Emmett's been underrated, you know, basically the whole time, I think, in my opinion, he's been in the UFC thus far. And this is a guy that bet against him, actually, in Des Green fight. So, I mean, I was able to cash on the Des Green fight. I thought stylistically Des Green was a tough matchup. And there's a lot of similarities, honestly, between Des Green at lightweight and Jeremy Stevens at featherweight, obviously, because these guys, they both have good takedown defenses. They're both dangerous strikers. Now, of course, you can argue that Stevens is a more dangerous striker. I realize that, but I'm saying, making comparisons, guys that can stuff the takedowns, keep the fight upright, and do enough damage on the feet to kind of outpoint Emmett or even possibly finish him, give him trouble like that. So I see a lot of similarities there. But at 145 pounds, I think it is a great weight class for Emmett. I mean, he showed his size, his strength. He's coming off a very impressive performance, to say the least, over Ricardo Lamas. I mean, he just floored Lamas. That punch was beautiful that he hit him with, and that's the kind of power he possesses and the kind of timing and accuracy Emmett has as well. Now, on top of that, let's not forget, Emmett does have a wrestling background. The guy's capable of getting the fight to the floor, and he has a pretty good grappling pedigree as well. I mean, training with Team Alpha Male, all those guys are great grapplers. They have good chokes. You know that those guillotine chokes are something to watch out for as well. So Emmett is a very complete fighter, and this is a spot for him to get a win over a very respectable opponent like Stevens. And then again, like I said, launch himself to the next level here. He's trying to get in title contention at 145 pounds. And with a win over Stevens, especially an impressive one, he's going to be on definitely heading in the right direction. He's going to be right on track for that. So it's tough though. I mean, it's going to be a difficult fight. Stevens is more battle tested. That's for sure. And my hesitation here, I'm going to pick Emmett to win, but I'm going to go against the grain because everybody seems to be going Stevens' way anyway. But my hesitation with Emmett would be that it is a championship type of fight, meaning the championship rounds are going to come into play here. It's a main event. So round four and five are going to be interesting because Emmett does have a tendency to slow down as the fight progresses a little bit. He's got all that muscle mass and that strength, and you know, he does put his foot on the gas throughout the fight. And by the end of the three-round fight, a lot of times he is not as fresh, obviously, as he was early on. So in round four, round five, a main event type of featured fight, what's he going to be like when he goes to deep waters? Because this fight has potential to go that long. I mean, both these guys have pretty solid chins. It's not like you're getting, you know, even though they have knockout power that they can end things with one strike, I think they're tough enough to sustain each other's power and kind of keep this thing going for a while as well. So that's my only concern here with Emmett. I think that he can kind of honestly hold his own in any area here against Stevens. He probably has an edge in several areas early on, including a little bit of wrestling. Even though Stevens has good takedown defense, I think Emmett can mix things up well enough to maybe steal a takedown or two along the way. I think Emmett's going to be landing consistently enough on the feet early on that he can be outpointing Stevens on the feet as well. So I think it's going to be Emmett early on. Can he hold on in round four and five to get the nod or even possibly maybe finish Stevens along the way with that power that he does have? Possibly. But that's where my concern does get a little bit more real as if the fight does, like I said, get into later stages. So I'm going to pick Emmett. I am going to go against the grain. I do like what I see in this guy, and I think that he is a legit contender at 145 pounds, but this is going to be a stern test. And I kind of want to see this fight play out in round four, round five, to see what he's really made of. Because if he still has enough left in the tank in the deep waters, then the rest of the division definitely will be on notice here if he can get this job done against Stevens. So again, I'm going to go against the grain. I'm going to pick Emmett to win, but it should be a battle, and it's a great fight I'm looking forward to.
I'll give Emmett some credit. I did not think that he would look as good against Ricardo Lamas as he did. I still think that Lamas is the better technical fighter, but Lamas does have not a very good chin, and Emmett caught him, and Emmett showcased more power than I thought that he had. So I have to give him some respect there, and I was definitely wrong about him in that department. But against Jeremy Stevens, I think that it's similar issues could present themselves. Emmett's a fighter that is pretty well-rounded, but he's still not that great at anything. I mean, he has wrestling, but he's not able to just go ahead and take down people with power doubles at any moment's notice. He has respectable striking, but I mean, he's not an elite striker that can just go toe to toe with the best stand up artists in the division. He has a little bit of power, but I don't think that he can just go out and smash people on the feet and knock them out with one punch like most of the top power punchers in the division. So it feels to me like he's more of a jack of all trades, master of none type of guy. Well, with Jeremy Stevens, we know what we're getting with him. I mean, he is a guy that, while he's not the most technical striker, he has improved in that department over the years. I think that he has become a more dangerous and capable striker. He always has had the power, and conditioning has really never been that much of a problem for him. I think when you know that at any moment's notice, you might be able to land that one big shot and get the victory, that gives someone a little bit of confidence that they don't have to force things. And that's kind of what Stevens has been doing. He has not been forcing it. And I thought that he looked amazing in his last bout against Duho Choi. You know, that's a fighter that is very dangerous and exciting. And Stevens was composed against an explosive, powerful striker and was very good with his striking defense and really punished Choi and eventually got the second round stoppage. So this time around against Emmett, I think Stevens will push a good pace on the feet. I think that he can at least hold his own, if not get the better of Emmett in the stand-up portions. And Stevens has always had pretty good takedown defense. I mean, it's only been the best of the best that have been able to put him down, like Frankie Edgar. So I think with Stevens having stuffed guys like Nick Lentz in the past, but Darren Elkins in the past, then I think that he can stop Josh Emmett from getting the takedown. So while I do see Josh Emmett as a more well-rounded fighter, I think that Stevens is a little bit more refined in the areas where he is still really good, and Stevens is good enough to thwart some of Emmett's bigger strengths. And as Nick mentioned, conditioning is something that could be a huge factor in this fight. We haven't seen Emmett go 25 minutes before, but Stevens has headlined several contests now, and I think that he'll be just fine going 25 minutes. We've seen him get those late third round stoppages in fights. And, you know, he's a guy that's going to be dangerous from start to finish in this fight. And I just think that Stevens will do enough to sway the judges if it goes 25 minutes. I think as this fight goes on, it'll move a little bit more towards Stevens because he has a little bit more confidence in his conditioning. And I think Stevens is fighting at a very high level right now, and he's got some momentum. And even though Emmett did pick up that impressive knockout over Lamas, I don't know if I can just trust him yet at the featherweight division, because, you know, he didn't look that great at the end of his run at lightweight. So I think that against top guys that can survive a punch from Emmett, I think that they can outwork him and win decisions against him. So, I think Jeremy Stephens pulls this one out either by knockout or by decision at some point. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 28. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.